This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jadson.
All right, and welcome back to your weekly edition of Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jackson. As always, Mark, what's new, man? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I feel like we always kind of start these with weather, but I know the last time that we did one, you know, we were just kind of looking towards spring, and now spring is here, and the weather's been pretty solid. You know, and it was quite the week at the box office. One main movie everyone's talking about, but I'm happy to get into it, and we will definitely get into it.
Yeah, man, things are back in swing. I feel like we had just, and we've harped on this probably every week almost since we started, but very droll start to the year, a couple disappointments at the box office, and then, you know, Captain Marvel exploded, doubled expectations of what, you know, at least what I was thinking it was going to put up. Another strong weekend last week. April's looking great. So, I don't know, man. A lot of good things going on, and I'm starting to feel pretty positive about the strong outlook for 2019 movie-wise.
Hope springs eternal. We're in spring, and hope springs eternal. It's like a rebirth in a way.
Damn right. All right, well, should we go ahead and dive into the real news?
Let's get it to it.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone!
All right, well, kicking off the real news today. And, man, this is something we've talked about a lot. And I don't know why it's been so back and forth and all the different news surrounding James Gunn and Guardians of the Galaxy and Suicide Squad. But it is official. James Gunn is back directing Guardians of the Galaxy 3. For those who may have forgotten, Gunn came under some heat when some old, I think, tweets resurfaced. And I don't remember the nature of them. I know that they, you know, certainly were offensive to a particular group of people. And, you know, Disney removed Gunn from the director's chair. In the meantime, he took over directing Suicide Squad 2. Yeah. And now Disney's backtracked and they rehired him. So that's a little bit of background on what's going on. Mark, what are your thoughts? And is this going to impact Suicide Squad 2 at all?
I don't think it'll impact Suicide Squad 2 at all. It looks like that this is not going to start shooting until February 2021. So we're still, you know, almost 2 years away from the date, more or less. March now, February then. So no, I don't think that we're gonna, it's gonna impact that. I guess maybe my only worry is, you know, between 3 and 2. 2 came out, I want to say, 2016? Was that 2016, 2017?
I think 2016.
Okay. 2016 or 2017, one of the 2 years. I guess my only concern is, by the time we probably finally get to a new Guardians, it will be like 5 or 6 years since we've seen some of these characters. And not that that necessarily is a bad thing, but I do think that in some ways, time spent away from these characters is might not be as good as we think it is, just because, I don't know, you can sometimes chemistry is chemistry, but when you're away for so long, it does seem like if you're just going to start shooting 2 years from now, probably not going to get that movie until 2022 at the earliest. So I don't know. Like, I think it's good that he's coming back. I have to presume it's going to be a trilogy. I guess you can do as many movies as you want of these. But I don't know. I got some odd feeling that it's probably just going to cap as a trilogy, because I don't know if I can see it. I don't know how many movies I see some of these other people doing. Like, I know Vin Diesel and what's his name, Bradley Cooper, just do the voices, but I don't know if I could see them doing like 4, 5, 6, 7 of these. If anything, now since we've lost Gamora too, and you got to think there's be some intense changes with that whole group, I feel like it will be after this movie a good chance for them to either reboot or maybe split off a character in one way or the other as we start getting into this new phase of Marvel. So I don't know. I'm happy to kind of see him cap off the trilogy, and maybe that's me overstating things. It's just a feeling I've got. I will have to see a lot more before I, wholeheartedly expect this third movie to be like really, really good.
You know, one thing that I just realized as you were kind of talking about this is life after, Endgame,
mm-hmm.
when they wrap up the Avengers like quasi trilogy,
yeah.
if you will, is just the level of interest that I'm going to have after that's over. And I'm sure that I'll still be, invested in the movies.
Sure.
But part of me thinks that it's all been leading into this, huge climax and conclusion. And afterwards, I'm almost going to want to like distance myself a little bit from, Marvel and Avengers. And they're just going to mean less because they're not all, converging into this huge,
right.
Trilogy of movies anymore. So I don't know. I never really gave any thought until this minute, but
In a way, I'm not a huge comic book nerd, my stretch of imagination, but in a way it is a little bittersweet. I've had that thought a little bit off from time to time. I don't give a whole bunch of, deep thinking to it, but I've heard that there are other huge stories they can do, like some, Kroll or Kree invasion. I'm probably butchering that name, but it was the quote-unquote antagonist from Captain Marvel before we figured out they weren't actually the antagonist. But I heard there's some huge kind of invasion that they can do that can almost be up to the level of Thanos and his story. But I don't know. On the other hand, I just feel like I don't know how much bigger, this whole intergalactic, meeting of the minds can go in Marvel. So I'm kind of with you. I don't know if it'll ever get any bigger than this. It's hard to say, but I think this is probably going to be like the peak of Marvel as far as just everyone coming together and, having those moments. We'll have to see maybe what the next phase looks like. And I've heard that the next phase of movies isn't necessarily going to be called phases, but mm-hmm. we'll have to see. I've definitely given thought to that though, yeah. here and there about like, where are we going to go after this?
Yeah, I would think they have to connect the movies to some extent because, one of the best parts of all the movies is the post-credit scenes, seeing how they're connected and what the driving force in the series moving forward is going to be.
Right.
When they started teasing with like Thanos or, characters meeting each other. So I don't know, be very interested to see, the next, 2 to 3 years, really the path that the Marvel and Avengers series takes.
Absolutely.
I guess on that note, we kind of shifted into Endgame, and we had a couple things to talk about. One is they have made the runtime official, and it's going to be the longest Avengers, Marvel movie to date, which I don't think is a huge surprise.
Yeah.
I imagine they have quite a bit of content to squeeze in here to, wrap up the series. But it's going to be 3 hours and 2 minutes, and I'm really happy about that, Mark. I want a long movie. I know they have a ton of storylines they'll be touching on, and I want to make sure all the characters get enough screen time in what could be their final outing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really excited to see that they cracked the 3-hour mark.
Wow. Wow. This is the first kind of news that I've heard about the runtime. I'm not mad at it. I feel like people can talk about it being bloated, but if any kind of movie has a reason to be probably as, and I feel like bloated is a bad word, but if any movie has the need to, be this thorough and be this long with all the time that people have spent with these characters, it probably should be Avengers Endgame. So I don't think it's going to be a huge, piece at all. I have to imagine, I don't even know what the screen times are going to look like. I mean, you see a lot with Star Wars, in the fall and winter, they'll have your screening start, almost 24 hours, like 12 a.m. to 12 a.m. back to back. I have to imagine it's going to be something like that too, where, we're not actually in summer yet, though this movie will kick off the summer season for all intents and purposes. But I have to think a lot of theaters are probably going to be operating 24 hours. I have to think it won't be crazy to see them showing at 3:20 or something like that of this movie just for the first couple weeks.
Oh yeah, man! They're going to be churning these things out, just you know, rinse and repeat to get the theater filled. So, yeah, I have no doubt they'll probably try to minimize you know downtime in between viewings and you know pump out as many showings as possible.
Right, but yeah, just to hit on your initial point, it's not a concern to me. I don't mind longer movies a lot of times, and with all the time we spent with these heroes, with these characters. That just kind of expresses me like, you know, they're going to take the time and there's going to be probably some extremely moving moments. So, you know, I can't wait. We're about a month away now. So, let's have it. Let's get to it.
Yeah. And the Russo brothers, they pace their movies really well. A lot of action, a lot of fun dialogue. Infinity Wars was about 2.5 hours and I thought it flew by. So I don't think it should be a concern at all. And then you mentioned, Mark, about whether or not it sounded like they were toying with the idea of whether or not they're going to release a final trailer.
Yeah, I forget who had made the news about the final trailer, but yeah, I feel like everyone has seen the last trailer at this point. And I don't think I'm saying anything where it just seems like a lot of flashbacks, and you know, you've got that rallying point, the last 10, 15, 20 seconds, you know, they're going to do whatever it takes to, you know, restore order within the universe, Thanos' order. But, yeah, I've heard that this might be the last trailer, you know, and I know for a lot of people they wanted to see a little bit more, but I've always been of the opinion that I, first and foremost, think trailers spoil too much, but, you know, when you've got a movie this big that is such a guarantee, a big thing, you don't need to show a whole bunch. It's totally fine to just, you know, play the less is more card. And the cool thing I have been reading is, you know, the Russo brothers have put in some intentionally maybe misleading things. Like they shot pieces just to appear in the trailer. Those pieces might not appear in the movie.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, I'm cool with it. You know, you're a director, do your own thing. I think that, again, you know, people are and studios are way too eager sometimes to show bits, every little bit and piece of what the plot will look like. So if that's what they're doing and they seem to confirm like they have, I'm all for it. I think more production studios should take this chance.
Yeah, it's a really unique approach in how they've gone about the trailers of you know, using a lot of flashbacks just to other movies. You know, just to kind of build the hype and help you remember where some of these characters came from, but at the same time, they're not really revealing anything.
Right.
I think the biggest thing they've revealed so far is in the most recent trailer, they showed Tony Stark with the rest of the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, he's, you know, floating in space following Infinity Wars. So I think everybody knew that he was going to regroup with them at some point, but just, you know, now they finally showed that he will indeed. But I think that's really the only thing they've shown so far is, you know, that and the fact that Hawkeye's back.
Right. Yeah, and we saw that from, I think, the first trailer, too. So not a massive surprise. But, no, when they said, like, they've intentionally manipulated the trailer footage and may have shot something here and there that won't necessarily show up in the movie, I thought that was pretty awesome. You know, I'm all about deception.
Yeah, that's all.
You know, for this type of movie, you know, the least expectations. Well, I mean, I have expectation for this movie, but I guess the least I can predict for this type of thing, the better.
Yep, I cannot agree more, man. And with that, speaking of trailers, we had the first teaser drop for Quentin Tarantino's upcoming film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mark, I don't believe you've had the opportunity to view this one, so
I have not.
I'll just burn through it really quick. But essentially, it's about Leonardo DiCaprio is a film star in the 70s, I believe, and Brad Pitt is his stuntman. And this all takes place during the time of the Charles Manson murders. So Charles Manson's in the movie. I think Sharon Tate is going to be played by Margot Robbie, who is one of the victims. And there's not really a lot of background on, you know, the exact turn that the story is going to take and, you know, what the plot points are going to be. You know, the trailer, it's kind of gives you a bit of, you know, background on what, like the set and the the time is going to feel like. And I think Tarantino does a great job at capturing the 70s, really in the style that they go for. You know, they've got somebody playing Bruce Lee, who was apparently involved with all this to some extent, and they show him and Brad Pitt's character fighting. So, wow. I mean, really hard to gauge anything, but, you know, you can definitely tell it's Tarantino. It's got his, you know, sense of dialogue and humor to it. And, man, just get me to July so I can see more of this movie.
Okay, so it sounds like you're all, I mean, I think to both all extents and purposes, you and I were both all in, but it sounds like you thought this was a really, really good first trailer. I mean, snippets, but really good first trailer.
Yeah, you know, it's fun. You get a little taste of what, you know, Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio's character is going to be like. And, you know, that's certainly my main draw to the movie is, you know, they've both had, you know, huge parts in separate Tarantino films. So now for them to share the screen, you know, together, I couldn't be more excited for that. So, yeah, you know, good teaser, gives you a little taste, doesn't spoil or reveal anything, and just definitely built my excitement for the summer.
All right. I will have to check it out. If it's just a trailer then, or just a teaser, then I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. Then I'll give it a review.
Yeah, I think it'd be worthwhile. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up the real news for this week, and we'll go ahead and take a pause for a couple minutes just to hear about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
We'll return after these announcements.
MovieMavericks.com, broadcasting current box office breakdowns, movie news, and reviews. Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
Hey now, even though we're over 200 episodes deep into the Movie Mavericks podcast, it's still not too late to start listening.
Where every show we give you 10 truths, 20 lies, and a bunch of Hollywood secrets.
It's like existentialism slipping into nihilism.
MovieMavericks.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Jason.
And Aaron.
And we are the hosts of the For Better or Worse podcast. Like most couples, we have pretty different tastes.
There's a lot of things we agree on, of course, but it can be pretty difficult to find something to watch at the end of the day.
She likes comedies, love stories, and dramas.
And he likes anime, horror, sci-fi, and fantasy.
So we both thought it would be fun to force each other to watch our favorite movies, shows, or anything else we can think of, and record it here for you guys.
The show is a lot of fun, and it's not always torture. Sometimes we actually come around to each other's side.
We would love for you guys to give us a shot, so download For Better or Worse anywhere you listen to your favorite shows, and join us in the fun.
We can't wait to share our experiences with you.
And welcome back to Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham and Mark Jackson. And now we're going to go ahead and dive into the box office weekend recap.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
And run through some quick numbers here. I think we both are pretty excited to get to the number one spot, so we'll just do a quick recap of 5 through 2. All right, down one spot from 4 to 5 is How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, with 6.5 million domestically. From 3 down to spot number 4 is 5 Feet Apart with 8.5 million domestically. Mark, I feel like you might have touched on that one, but I don't even remember what that was about.
I have not touched on 5 Feet Apart, actually. Your guess is as good as mine. I guess one movie I did touch on that is outside the top five, unfortunately, did not do is not going to generate any money at this point, is Captive State. I did get around to checking that out. I checked that out last Sunday, and I just got to posting about it yesterday, so it is on thatmomentin.com. I'll try to keep it relatively brief, but you're familiar with District 9, if I recall, right?
I haven't seen it, but I understand the concept of the movie.
All right, it's kind of like a poor man's District 9. So the aliens, you know, come and they, you know, stake their claim to our Earth, and you know, a lot of people are just very, very compliant. So like they've overthrown our systems, our government, etc. But there is one kind of resistance that, you know, is not going to stand for this, and you know, they fight to you know, restore order in their vision. There's some good I like about it. You know, I'd say the first 5-10 minutes, thrilling opening scene, amazing opening scene. It is directed by Rupert Wyatt, the same guy who did the initial trilogy starter, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which was the third weakest of the three, but it got everything started, and I think it's still a pretty good movie. But he did that. But yeah, I mean, there's some things I like about it. It's not as, I guess, heady as I'd want, or let me backtrack. It kind of feels like a movie that got done last year that I talked about and also reviewed, that movie being Kin. The main issue with these movies is there's actually a lot of meat that they do have, but they don't really have a lot of time to tell it in an hour and 45 minutes or 2 hours. I would rather have them done like a TV series, or maybe like a Netflix, you know, limited run or something, because there is a lot of meat in these things. And as there are some moments where I'm truly gripped, but the other moments where the pacing is just really off, they get away from the main character for like 20, 25 minutes, just as he's starting to get into it. And, yeah, I mean, it was very kind of hit and miss. I would never tell anyone to go, you know, buy a ticket to check it out. I would say just it will be on Netflix soon enough if you want to check it out. There's some good. There's some things that, you know, I got disappointed in. So I had high hopes, but last time we did this, I was kind of like, I don't know if I'm feeling as high as I did originally. And ultimately, it did $3 million its first week, about $1.5 million this week, and you know, I don't think it's going to make $10 million total. So yeah, those are my thoughts.
Oh man, that's a bummer, because I think that you and I did a podcast, I think right at the beginning of the year, for, you know, some of like our potential sleepers for 2019.
Yep.
And this is one that you were pretty excited about. You know, you definitely got me a little excited about it. And just a bummer to hear that it didn't pan out.
Yeah, the one thing I said before on one of the episodes is I feel like it's probably going to come and go, whether it's really, really good or kind of forgettable. It's much more along the lines of forgettable than I would have liked, but I kind of saw this coming a little bit. But it's forgettable kind of for a reason. There's outside of that opening scene, the performances are fine. John Goodman is John Goodman. I think he's pretty solid in a lot of things, but he's not necessarily being stretched in this role. And Ashton Sanders, I do think the kid is talented, but this isn't the vehicle for him, and I think it kind of does him a disservice when he's supposed to be the main character, but he feels very much like a supporting character in throughout this movie. So it's really kind of hard to get lashed on to people, and some people are introduced as quickly as they are, or they're gone as quickly as they're introduced. So there's really not like much to tether onto with any of these characters. And I did think the production was good. There was some really good music by composer Rob Simonson. I've been listening to that score a little bit. But, yeah, overall, I'd say it's a lot more of the forgettable side, and I think it kind of just boils down to storytelling. I would have rather see them use, like, a documentary approach that you do see in District 9, where you can get to figure out, like, just who these aliens are, what they're doing here, and what kind of it fills in the gaps when they kind of tell the story that way. But here there were a couple more gaps that left you wanting a lot more.
Yeah, I gotcha. Speaking of disappointing movies, did you happen to watch Triple Frontier?
I did not watch Triple Frontier, no.
Okay, well, I'm not going to go too deep into it, but man, I had very high hopes for it. I was really thinking that Netflix might be turning things around. They put together a huge cast with Ben Affleck, Oscar Isaac, Garrett Hedlund, Pedro Pascal, and Charlie Hunnam. And man, did they miss with that.
Mm.
all the potential in the world and just no connection between the characters. They crafted an uninteresting story. You know, I don't know. It's just when you have a drug heist in the jungle, you'd think that'd be hard to screw up. And
yeah.
Just did not deliver at all.
I've kind of been hearing takes all over the place. Yours definitely seems like it's more muted, even negative. And I've got around to reading David's take on the website, and he's pretty positive about it. So I was very curious to kind of hear where you fit in. It seems like you're very much on the other side of the spectrum, where you were wanting to be thrilled, and it seemed like it was, in your opinion, pretty forgettable. And I guess they just kind of made this movie and story a lot boring than you would have anticipated.
Yeah, I feel like David does a much better job at going into movies with an open mind.
Sure.
And appreciating them for what they are.
Sure.
And I go in wanting what I'm expecting.
Sure.
And if it varies from that, for the most part, I'm going to be disappointed.
I see.
So,
yeah.
So probably a fault of mine, but regardless.
You're self-aware, so that's there's a positive in knowing that.
Oh, thanks, Mark. Nice spin. Well, all righty. Go ahead and get back on track here with the number three spot of the weekend, which was Wonder Park with $8.7 million. Down one spot from number one to number two is Captain Marvel with $34 million. And just got to give a quick shout out. It's only been out for 3 weeks, and it's brought in over $900 million worldwide. So this movie is a blockbuster. It's an absolute blockbuster. It's a monster at the box office. It's going to get $1 billion without blinking an eye. And again, like we've said, this, you know, shame on us for you know, not really sticking to our guns on the strength of the Marvel franchise for how big this one was going to open. But just a huge movie.
We flopped. Yeah, we flopped very, very bad.
Yeah, won't be doing that again.
Nope.
All right, well, Mark, you want to bring us into the number one?
Yeah, so number one, big surprise here. Not really, but us finishing in the number one spot, topping over $70 million. And I think a lot of people had this, obviously, number one, but to the $70 million tune, I mean, he basically doubled what he did in his initial debut with Get Out. So I think it just kind of shows the admiration and the brand that Jordan Peele has built up off of one movie that, people were actively waiting on this one.
Absolutely. And I think it was one of the most anticipated movies of the year, I would venture to say. And that's all because of, the critical acclaim and the box office success that Peele found with Get Out. And honestly, I think it really made him one of the, I guess not like most exciting or most popular, most talked about directors, writer directors out there. And, there was a huge interest and a following for this movie. I thought they did a tremendous job with the trailers. One of my favorite parts of the trailer was a little remix that they did to the song Five on It.
Yep.
And I kept thinking, I was like, man, do I hope they put this in the movie? And they even exceeded my expectations with what they did with that song.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they did. They did. He leaned on that kind of heavily in an area too.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we should get right to it.
Do you want to, Mark, do you want to do a quick, 1 minute recap of, a high level plot overview?
Yeah, certainly. So I don't think it's any surprise, but, Us revolves around the family of four, led by, mother Lupita Nyong'o. Her name is, Adelaide, and she's taking her two children and her husband, actually she's getting led to the beach, and something's happened at this beach when she was young, so she's very reluctant to go. There's a lot of weird juju and deja vu kind of happening, but they get there. It seems pretty basic. Some weird stuff happens, and then one point The family looks out and they see a family of four that looks immediately just like them. And from there, all chaos ensues. And, you know, we start to figure out the pieces as to just who this family is, what they want with Adelaide's family. And yeah, that's about in a nutshell.
Yeah, I think that's perfect with avoiding any potential spoilers there. Mark, I mean, what'd you think of the movie, man?
All right. Well, I will get started. I thought the movie, John, was pretty original. He's taken some things from some other pieces, obviously. I think one of the media pieces that he had been influenced by was The Twilight Zone. I'm not going to spoil the episode, but there's an episode that he said that has influenced his movie of Us very, very significantly. There's a lot of things that he uses, and if you look at the movie, he's very much influenced by movies of the past. I mean, you'll see things like, you know, Jaws in here. You'll see some other movies in here too, where you can tell he's very much a passionate fan of horror. But how did I feel about the movie? I liked it a lot. I don't like to compare a whole bunch, but I think it's just natural because this is only his second movie, and, you know, the phenomenon that was Get Out was his first movie. If I'm comparing the two, I do think Get Out is a stronger overall movie, but I believe that Us is probably a little better if you look at it just as a pure horror. But if you're looking like maybe like for like a stronger plot or just a better shaped movie in totality, I would probably say Get Out has that beat just by a little bit.
Okay. So I think for a lot of this, we're on the same page, Mark, and I really liked the movie. I'll throw a hot take out there. Okay. I didn't love Get Out.
All right.
I thought it was fine. I didn't see as much originality to it as other people did.
Sure.
And I thought it was an entertaining thriller. I was pretty surprised to see that it had any business at the Oscars. But I enjoyed the movie nonetheless. It certainly had me excited for Us, and man, I thought Us was tremendous. I thought it exceeded my expectations of what I was hoping it was going to be. My one qualm about the movie is that, you know, I think Peele really makes the audience think.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, hidden messages and, you know, what might this be like an allegory for?
Sure.
So the entire time I was sitting there trying to, you know, enjoy the movie, but then part of my mind was trying to figure out, you know, like what the deeper meaning to everything is.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like very conflicted and, you know, like going back and forth inside my mind. But yeah, man, I really enjoyed it. So I thought it was just, you know, entertaining across the board.
Yeah. And I've heard that, voiced by a lot of people that, you know, in their minds, Get Out might be a stronger movie, but I would much rather watch Us, or I'm not speaking for myself here, but other people, it's like, I'd much rather watch Us more times over than Get Out, just because, you know, both have a pretty significant level of comedy, though I would argue that I think Us is a little more, kind of leans a little more heavy towards horror than Get Out does in certain areas. But still, I do think that there might be a little more of a rewatchability factor with Us that isn't necessarily there with Get Out all the time. So I'm well with you on that front. You kind of hit on it a little bit in regards to, you know, the overall plot and the structure a little bit. This can be taken a lot of different ways, and I think that's awesome that Jordan Peele has done that. You know, a lot of people have made the point that Us, you know, look at the letters, U and S, it's standing for the U.S., and, you know, there's so many, you know, divisions, and there's so many things that, you know, us as humans like to pick apart, like, this is what this person's doing wrong, it's all on you, but maybe we should look inside more, and maybe there's, you know, some things that we need to work on. How I got the movie, at least on a base level, was, you know, there's a shadow side in each of us, and there are things that we all suppress from day in, day out, you know, each single time that we step out of the door. I think it's upon, you know, us as individuals to kind of know that, hey, we do have the shadow side in us, and we need to kind of you know, come to grips with that. And we need to, you know, be self-aware of that. You know, if we don't kind of tackle this or, you know, be honest with what we're dealing with, you know, it can overtake us. And if it doesn't overtake us, maybe something might come up that does, you know, just bring it out of us and brings it out of us to something we don't want to see. That seems kind of vague, but that's kind of like at least one of the main pieces I got out that, you know, sometimes our biggest enemy is us. We have to look in the mirror and we have to figure out, you know, how do we reconcile with our most deepest, you know, darkest negative desires?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Peele, you know, looks at, I think he tries to incorporate, you know, a certain sort of like, you know, real world issues yep. into his movies. And yeah, I mean, to your point, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of the people committing these atrocities in the world, it's, you know, it's just normal people that, you know,
right.
You just, you know, just there's like an evil inside them.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they don't have control over. So, yeah, I think you're pretty spot on for, you know, part of what he was going for there.
I guess we can cut it right here, not cut the entire podcast, but we can say, guys, if you haven't seen it, hopefully we haven't been too descriptive with any of the spoilers yet, but I feel like right now we might start getting into spoilers a little bit, so if you haven't seen it, I would highly advise you guys to stop it right here and maybe come back after you've seen it. That work for you, John?
Yep. Yeah, let's go ahead and let's kick things off.
Great. So I guess I'll get just one piece started. You know, very early on in the movie, there are some things that reoccur a lot. One of the pieces that immediately stuck out to me was one of the Bible verses, Jeremiah 11:11. You know, it's got the four numerals all the same. It's very kind of reflective. You know, it's very much equal. If anyone doesn't know this verse, it essentially kind of boils down to, you know, God delivering a judgment and a warning to the people of Judah who have, you know, done crazy, tons of sins that they've done. So he's launching a warning in this verse saying that, you know, since you're doing this, there's going to be like a great inescapable disaster that I'm going to put upon your nation for all the wrong you've done. So looking at that verse that way, it kind of makes sense now, like that, you know, there's, again, we're in the spoilers, there's a whole nother level of people who are underground. It's kind of one of the first things that Jordan Peele talks about. You know, there's a whole nother level of people that are underground. And we find out that these people, everyone has a doppelganger. And these people have been planning this huge kind of revolt for a long, long time. And you can tell, like, these people have just been, you know, pissed off and kind of fed up with being left to die. You know, the government created us and, you know, it didn't work, so we've just forgotten. But, you know, we're going to make sure we're not forgotten. So now it's time for us to, you know, bring judgment onto these people who have these lives that we want.
Yeah, I think, and now that you mention, you know, the whole, like, where the, you know, the tethered people came from.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was, you know, like a government, like a failed government experiment. That was the only part that felt a little,
sure.
I don't know if lazy is the right word or just like unoriginal.
Yeah.
And I get where he's coming from. Like he's got to, you know, he's got to give that some background of where these people came from. And it's hard to come up with a creative idea that's not going to make people, you know, like throw their arms up in the air. But, that was the only thing that really stuck out as like, could you have done better with that plot point? Maybe.
Yeah, I think the main thing that it's kind of funny I bring up to this, but I've kind of seen it in a lot of different places. You know, one of the things I've heard is, well, where are they to get the scissors? Where are they to get everyone to dress in these red jumpsuits? You know, that takes a lot of strategy to get everything uniform and then, you know, come up as they do. Yeah, I would have loved to... I guess without maybe getting too deep in the weeds, I guess I just would have loved to see, you know, what was the actual like strategy and logistics in getting all this, you know, planned out, because, you know, and especially that end shot, I guess we're deep in the spoilers here, but, you know,
yeah.
One of the first pieces that Jordan Peele puts up in the movie is, you know, we get zoomed into this television screen and it has this 1986 commercial, I want to say, of Hands Across America, which I'm still kind of fuzzy on exactly all the intricacies of it, but essentially it, it sounds like it was some kind of charity where people were coming together. If everyone donated $10, like, I don't know, we could link all the population across the world, like from sea to shining sea. I'm probably getting something wrong, but essentially, like, that's where this, I guess, idea comes from. And then one of the last shots of the movie is just like a long 30-second to minute wide shot, and you see all of the tether people just linked. I know some of this is just, metaphorical, but, if we're looking at that just like at a literal sense, I guess I'm wondering, like, what happens to these people? I guess we can presume that they have obviously, overtaken their doppelgangers. Like, they become the people in this world now. But I don't know. Like, it's, on one hand, I get it. It's not all going to be literal. It's not all going to be literal. But on the other hand, like, you've got these 4 million people here who technically maybe aren't supposed to be here, which I guess is kind of like an immigration thing. I don't know. But I just found it, like, kind of, it felt a little more open-ended than I would want. And I love that questions are asked, but again, all of them are just linked and it just kind of ends. And I don't know. I would have loved to see, what actually becomes of these people, if anything.
Yeah, a couple things you mentioned. One is loving that, he leaves all these questions up in the air. And man, did he do an incredible job at leaving a lot up there for interpretation. I mean, if you Google search for us, you're going to find just article after article of people trying to evaluate what some of the hidden meaning of this movie was.
Right.
And I think that's, the brilliance of film is, driving conversation and listening to, people's unique takes on what things meant. So kudos to Peele. He delivered in that for sure. But like you mentioned, where these people get the red jumpsuits and how they get so organized, where they get the scissors. In a movie that was an hour and 45 minutes and flew by, if he would have thrown 5 to 10 extra minutes in there of just showing a little bit more about their plan and the logistics of it, mm-hmm. I would have been totally fine with that.
Yeah. And, maybe some more stuff kind of makes sense upon a rewatch. I'm interested to definitely check it out again, just to maybe watch it with a different eye or from a different angle. Because the one thing that Peele has done in both this movie and Get Out was, I feel like he doesn't really waste scenes. Obviously we're asking for maybe a little bit more clarity on a few things. But with that said, he doesn't necessarily waste a scene. I feel like if he brings up something, it's going to be brought up at some point in time. Like, he's not a guy who just, if you see a gun in a scene, he's not going to use it. Like, he focuses on things and he will bring it up at some point in time. So I do like that. What do you think overall of, that last kind of little twist about, obviously I already talked about how Adelaide is technically red is technically Adelaide, but I think the main thing that, people that surprised people or maybe were unsure about is, Jason, her son, like, what happens to him? It seemed like either maybe he had got switched or he had figured out something. Maybe he wasn't the original kid before. I don't know. Like, what was your kind of takeaway on that?
So my takeaway on that was twofold. Is there's a shot earlier in the movie where Adelaide has to kill one of the twins.
I thought you were going to come to that. Yeah, I've been using that a lot. Sometimes the people have asked me, so I wanted to see where you kind of came from it too.
And I think he sees another side of her. Yep. When she kills that twin. He's like, whoa, this lady's crazy. Obviously, she's out for survival. Mm-hmm. But, like, the noise she makes and just how savage she was about it, I think he was like, this doesn't line up with who I thought my mother was. And at the very end of the movie, when Adelaide, kills Red, or however you want to go about saying that, he's hiding in the locker not that far from her, and right. She makes some, like, super creepy, like, tether-type noises right after she kills her.
Yeah.
And I think he just heard that, and he was like, all right, well, this is definitely not my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I didn't really think about the fact that Jason might have been switched. I guess we do watch his doppelganger die, But yeah, I thought that between those two scenes, he just had, you know, Adelaide pegged.
Did we watch Jason's doppelganger die? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, he backed him into the fire.
Oh, dear. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Never mind. Never mind. Whoops. Yeah. Then I like that you brought that up. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I really wanted to get to in regards to this, but
man, I gotta touch on the music at the end really quick. Sure. Because that was my favorite part, is when the two Adelaide and Red are fighting one another, and mm-hmm. not only does the remix to Five on It start playing, but he has a crescendo so loud and the bass is just booming to the point where the entire theater felt like it was shaking.
Yeah.
And it was just like a really creepy but extremely well shot. The music was perfect. I don't know, man. That to me was just brilliance, like at its peak.
I thought the score was tremendous. Not just the licensed music. There's a couple of points in this movie. I think it's kind of like, it's in the middle, but it's also kind of where we figure out, like, this isn't the only family. Everyone has a doppelganger. We see that, you know, Caucasian family, you know, who's there for comic relief. So, you know, we see them, you know, come in, and then we eventually see their doppelgangers come in. I think that was the point of the movie. Everyone's like, whoa, what the hell is going on here?
Right.
You know, we just thought it was just going to be the Wilsons, but no, it's everyone has a doppelganger. But anyway, I loved kind of the music he did there. I forget what song he led with. I think it was like the Beach Boys, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
He got to the Beach Boys. That was a cool moment. But then, you know, they're trying to get the police, and then NWA song comes on, and you know, it's just so funny seeing, you know, all this horror being juxtaposed with NWA song, and everyone's dying, and you know, we want the police. And yeah, I guess there's a statement in there too that Jordan Peele is subtly making as well, where maybe it's not subtle depending on who you are. But no, I thought the music was an extremely high point of the movie. I mean, production, this is on point from, you know, the beginning to the end. I thought Get Out was an exquisitely directed movie, especially for director. But I think, you know, Us just kind of shows how he's evolved in 2 years. The opening is awesome. I've already talked about that middle scene, but you know, that last scene where you kind of really get an idea of like the exact things that are going on in Red/Adelaide's world are going on in Adelaide/Red's world underground. And you know, the movements are mirrored to the exact same. It's just the environments that change. So I thought that was an amazing shot. There was one other shot that I was taken aback by. It's when Red, you know, goes into the cellar where everything is kind of happening. I guess it's more of the tunnels, but she goes there and, you know, she gets confronted again with a doppelganger, and her doppelganger is just writing on the chalkboard. But the way Jordan Peele films this, it's like, it's kind of over the shoulder, but it's a little different. I thought that was an amazing shot. I'm doing a horrible job describing it, but I thought that was just it. I don't remember seeing a shot like that before, you know, where you see the Lupita's character, the one that we spent all the time with, slowly starting to creep up. But, you know, Red, her doppelganger, is doing all the talking, and she's just going on and on. I thought that was a super immersive shot. The camera work on this is amazing. The production's amazing. We talked about the score, both the licensed music as well as the actual, you know, score itself. It's the same guy did Get Out, and I thought that had an awesome score too. But there's one kind of recurring theme in this movie. It's not the Loonies. I got five on it either. It's another theme that you know, I thought kind of really drove home the horror aspects. Even when things are kind of funny, there is like a level of chill and tension. It's not, you know, bone chilling by any stretch of the imagination, but it is kind of a I'd say a semi-significant step up from what he did from his last movie.
Yeah, some of the score throughout it, he really utilized like stringed instruments really well. Mm-hmm. He'll just like have them come in like really loud and like really fast, and he would almost do it when some of the doppelgangers are doing like their creepy movements. So it just really, you know, it really drove that home even more. So I don't know, man. The more we talk about this, the more I'm realizing like how brilliant Peele was with, you know, the way he shot it, the way he mixed the sound in and the music with it. I got to go see this movie again.
Yeah, I will definitely go see it again. And I was kind of, I don't want to say hesitant to see it again in theaters or anything, but I mean, I will definitely be a Blu-ray buy for me. I have Get Out on Blu-ray, so I mean, I will get this on Blu-ray too. But I saw Get Out twice in theaters, once on my own, once in another person I was seeing at the time. So yeah, I would love to kind of go again, you know, maybe take someone who hasn't seen it and just kind of, you know, get their takeaways as to what the, how well the movie did, kind of what it did for the most part. But yeah, I mean, I guess we can talk about it a little more for sure. You know, I definitely got the Stranger vibe from it, but and the Twilight Zone. So there's a lot more sci-fi in this movie than I would have anticipated. But, you know, he was inspired by a Twilight Zone episode, so that's not surprising. And, you know, there's some Black Mirror in it also. But I got a couple video game vibes from it too, especially when you start figuring out, like, again, everyone has a doppelganger. I got a lot of, like, Resident Evil and Gears of War even too. Like, if you ever played those games, there's this whole underground species called the Locust that, you know, has been planning this day forever. So when we start to figure out, like, this has been well thought out in advance by these people, I kind of got, like, that type of vibe from this movie. So I kind of loved how, you know, he brought all these different elements together, you know, things that have been done before, but he kind of, you know, threw them in a pot and still made an original offering out of it all.
Yeah, I think what Peele does is he doesn't steal content. He almost just, you know, does like an homage and almost like a hat tip to people that he respects. And, you know, I think he had the Jaws t-shirt incorporated because he loved Steven Spielberg and he was a very inspiring figure for him. So it's just things like that I think are really clever and really cool in the movie, and he does a great job with, you know, incorporating those kinds of things.
Now the last piece I feel like I've got to say, I'm not really saying much of the shocking, but, you know, I do think this was Lupita Nyong'o's best role that she's done at this point in her young career. She's only 36. I feel like she's gonna have many more great roles ahead of her. But if you know, you recall, she did win an Oscar Best Supporting Actress for 12 Years a Slave. She's awesome in that. But I don't know. I just feel like the what she has to do, and not just her, but the whole family as a whole. I mean, they're playing two roles, and all of them do great. But, you know, this is very much kind of her story as the main character. She's, you know, first billed. I thought, you know, she was amazing from the get-go. And again, I just feel like, you know, not to take anything from 12 Years a Slave, which is a powerful performance in its own right, but I feel like, you know, she had to be active. She had to be reactive in this movie. She had to do a lot, had to play two characters. I think it's the best work of her career, her best role to this point. It's still very, very early. We have to see what the rest of the year looks like. But I thought Daniel Kaluuya was great in his role as Chris Washington in Get Out. But, you know, I feel like if he can get a nomination, I see no reason why Lupita Nyong'o should not be able to get one either. I guess the only, I don't want to say negative or only thing that's counted against her is, you know, this is still a horror movie first, and we usually don't see horror movies get those type of nominations. But again, Get Out got one for Best Actor, so.
Man, she was... When she was in her Tethered character, she was virtually unrecognizable. She sounded completely different. She looked, she acted different. She moved differently. Incredible performance. She really, you know, did a great job at, you know, playing two divided roles. And I know this is early on, but, you know, I think it'd be safe to say that it'd probably be a pretty big snub if she doesn't wind up getting some acting love when Oscar season rolls around.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, she really committed to that. I forget exactly where she got the inspiration from, but she had listened to a person. I think it was Robert F. Kennedy, and I guess he had this disease. I might be saying wrong, but it was, like, spasmodic dysphonia, something neurological that basically induces, like, crazy spasms of the larynx. So, you know, it does make for a very, oddball kind of crazy sounding voice. So that's what she did tons of research on it. She said she's very fascinated, and that's how she got the sound to sound exactly how it does in the movie. The first time I heard it, I was like, what the heck is going on here? I don't understand it. But as soon as, you know, that whole exposition kind of, you know, stopped and we started to hear her more and more, like, I was sold. I mean, again, she plays two different characters to a T. They're both the same person, but they're very much divided. So, and that's very, very hard to do. And she said it was an kind of emotionally draining, but, you know, she committed to it. And I do think that if anyone else, you know, were to do this and didn't have that same level of commitment, us, you know, wouldn't work as well. But, you know, it's a very, very strong lead performance. And I can't believe this is the first time, like, she's actually been asked to, like, lead a movie. So I hope this is just, you know, the beginning for her, because she's uber talented. She's, you know, she also has a crazy presence on, in a good way. She has a very crazy presence on the screen. Like, she's very alluring. You know, she's got these eyes and she's got this, you know, that this look that is just very, very captivating. You know, whether she's playing the unhinged person or she's playing, you know, her quote unquote real person. So I think she's amazing. She's, you know, easy on the eyes, but she's very talented. She does a lot for the time that she's on the screen.
Yeah, tremendous actress. She absolutely crushed the role, and they probably couldn't have found anybody better to play it. I got to give a quick shout out to Winston Duke. The first time for me seeing him in something outside of a Marvel movie.
Sure.
And I thought he was great. I thought he brought some really strong comic relief to the movie, and probably a vast majority of the comic relief was brought through his character. And I thought he did a great job with it.
Yep.
And my last note that I got for us was, I know Peel had the actors. He gave them, I think, 10 different films that he wanted them to watch as inspiration for the movie. So, I mean, it just, again, shows how well he absorbs material and how well he, you know, pays tribute to, you know, films that he loves.
Yeah, I mean, he's very – this is a craft. I think, you know, I don't know how much of Key and Peele you had seen. I'm not surprised that, you know, he's so good as a director. You know, I don't think he did much directing-wise on the show, but – you know, a lot of those shorts, like, have really, really good productions. So I feel like he kind of just learned a lot of directing by osmosis. And, you know, he probably has a lot of, you know, really good friends in the business who had, you know, maybe imparted some knowledge on him. But, yeah, I mean, some of those shorts on Key & Peele, they are kind of on the more – on the creepier side of things. So, you know, you can tell, like, it's definitely not his first rodeo. So I love that he's, you know, applying all these different pieces, and, you know, he's passionate about you know, this genre. What do you think you want to see from him next? I mean, I feel like he can keep on doing, you know, horror as much as he wants, or, you know, horror with some overarching statements or something, but is there maybe something, like, you know, you'd want to maybe see him tackle? Or I guess the cool thing is he didn't do, like, another Get Out. Like, you can say this movie has a little bit of race in it, but honestly, it's not one of the first themes I think about. You know, I think of it more of like a societal thing, as opposed to, like, you know, it is more black and white, like maybe Get Out was or something like that. I feel like it's much more of, again, just, it's more like societal. Maybe it's a little bit more personal. So is there anything maybe you want to see him tackle after seeing, you know, him do two kind of similar but kind of different movies in ways too?
You know, I'm kind of torn because on one note, I really like the genre of movie that he's putting out.
Yep.
And I think he's doing it better than we've seen done in maybe decades. So selfishly, you know, I want him to keep pumping out movies of this, you know, slightly untapped genre that I have, you know, such a deep appreciation for.
Right.
But having said that, you know, his roots are in comedy, so I can only imagine how good of a – did he make Keanu, or did he just star in that?
I think he just starred in that. It was just – it was like a Key and Peele vehicle. He did not do Keanu. His first directorial foray was Get Out.
Okay. Well, then, yeah, in that case, I'd love to see what he could do with the comedy, because, you know, it's natural for him. We know the man can direct, and I can only imagine what kind of crazy comedy he would put out. So I'd love to see, you know, either just keep going down this foray of, you know, thriller horror movies, or I'd be all for seeing him, you know, try his hand at a full-blown comedy flick.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing a comedy either. I feel like he's got at least appreciation for sci-fi, so I'd love to see, like, you know, if he's got any really, you know, unique off-the-wall sci-fi ideas. I mean, I guess in some way, you know, a lot of things in sci-fi have been done already, but I feel like, you know, he has the type of mind, has the type of approach to maybe do some things that, you know, we hadn't seen, or maybe ask some questions that haven't been asked in a very, very long time. So if he wants to keep on doing this, I'm sure he has a lot more other ideas that he can generate into an effective script too. But yeah, I would like to see him do a comedy if he wants to do that. If he wants to do some type of off-the-wall sci-fi, or even meld the genres. I mean, he's proven that he could meld a lot of genres pretty efficiently. Get Out had, you know, comedy and horror. This movie had a little bit of comedy, a little more horror, but also, I think, in my opinion, had a pretty good deal of sci-fi. So, yeah, maybe his ultimate path is, you know, putting together all these different types of genres in ways that maybe we never really thought, like, they could go together.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. You know, he loves sci-fi. He's producing
Twilight Zone.
The Twilight Zone. Yeah. So I think this will probably give us a pretty good taste of, you know, what else he's capable of. And, you know, this might just even inspire him to, you know, do a full-blown dive into a sci-fi movie, which I love sci-fi movies, so sign me up for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was kind of, again, anticipating this, but I think, you know, it just needs to be reaffirmed. Like, after two movies, I feel like the guy is, like, he's an event watch now. There's not many directors that kind of have that moniker. I mean, you probably say Christopher Nolan. Quentin Tarantino, I would still say too, is an event watch. And I mean, there are probably other movies people I'm forgetting about too. I'd maybe say Spielberg. I don't know if his movies have the same type of draw and captivation like maybe they once did, but I mean, you know, Nolan, you know, it's still Tarantino, in my opinion. It's probably another director I am forgetting. For me, probably Denis Villeneuve, but I mean, I know a lot of his movies are very, they're not for the masses in a whole bunch of ways. And I would say you might have to put Jordan Peele in that group now. They all do different things, but, you know, I feel like at this point, like, whenever you see their name attached as a director, you know, they're going to generate a lot of buzz. And I feel like after two movies, he's done that.
Yeah, I think he definitely cemented himself in that place that you're talking about. And, man, you know, studios are going to come to him with an open checkbook at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like he's relatively, well, I don't want to say relatively selective. He's only done two movies, but we'll see. I feel as long as, you know, studios give him the reins to, you know, kind of tell his story, the possibilities are endless. So, yeah, you know, bring him on. Take your time with the next movie, but, you know, I'm happy to see where it goes from here too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, Mark, I thanks for doing the deep dive into us, man. I was pretty excited to talk to you about that.
Oh, no problem. Hopefully, guys, it made a little sense, and it didn't seem too helter-skelter for the most part. Again, I feel like it can go a lot of different ways. I feel like the takeaway I got from it was just maybe my overall belief, but I feel like more watches, I will probably pick up something else that I'd never thought of after an initial watch. So, and we're probably even doing a disservice just kind of talking about it after initial watch just because there is so much going on. But yeah, I mean, hopefully it sounded at least, you know, relatively thought out. So yeah, if you haven't seen it, go ahead and watch it.
I think those that have seen it will be able to keep up.
Yeah,
but all right. Well, we'll wrap things up real quick here. Coming up this weekend, March 29th, we've got two releases. The major one is going to be Disney's live action version of Dumbo, directed by Tim Burton, and then we've got kind of an indie film led by Matthew McConaughey called The Beach Bum coming out as well. So I think we've touched on Dumbo a pretty fair amount, especially with our March preview and. So I don't have a ton to add, Mark, if there's anything you wanted to mention about either of those movies.
I don't. The Beach Bum looks kind of, like a quirky indie movie that maybe could surprise, or it could be kind of, ugh, what were they doing? But if I get the opportunity, I think I might try to give it a view. I won't commit one way or the other, but if I've got the time, if it's playing around me, I might go ahead and try to watch it. Not so much about Dumbo. I feel like, this is the first of three Disney live action movies this year. I think it's going to be fine. Maybe, slightly better than average. I don't think it's going to be bad by any stretch of the imagination. With that said, I guess I'm not like super, into it or expecting a lot. So I might put this on a back burner. I do think it'll finish number one. Do you think that it'll finish number one, or do you think that Us has enough juice to take the number one spot again?
No, I think Dumbo will open number one. I'm going to put it at like 80 mil.
80 mil, okay. I don't know if it's going to go that high. I'm going to go and say conservative. I'll say 60 mil.
Okay. I definitely think this is going to be the weakest of the three.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Disney live actions, but... I feel like I've just been struggling with some predictions lately, but I got to go behind the strength of, Disney and their live action.
Okay.
Picks.
I respect that. So we've got 80 million for you, 60 million for me. I guess where you could be saved is there's really not a whole bunch of, animated stuff out. I feel like, what's the movie, How to Train Your Dragon? Huge numbers, but that's run its course. And I'm trying to see what else kind of comes here in the next couple of weeks that, could theoretically a whole family go to. Probably Dumbo is really their only option. And I don't know what would be the biggest upcoming one after that. I mean, it maybe might be The Secret Life of Pets or something, but that's months down the line. So, you're probably doing right. I would say that's a solid estimate going a little high. I didn't think about that until I started looking for release, but it could get to 80 million.
Yeah, we'll see. I could be way, way over. I could be way under. I really have no idea.
Yeah.
So time will tell, but, otherwise, I'm hoping to get a what to watch for April, sometime this week. Anything we can expect from yourself, Mark?
If I can get to the Beach Bum, I will get to the Beach Bum. I'm not going to make any promises, but I don't think anyone has claimed that yet. So yeah, if I can get to it, I'll probably try getting to it at some point. I don't know when, but one of these weeks I'm actually going to do, a little bit of a brief podcast with Vern. He does, this really specific podcast, and I think I was going to talk a little bit about the movie. It's one that came out a couple years ago, Ingrid Goes West, because we're going to talk like the ills of social media or something. So I'm going to get to that, but that's kind of that's a couple weeks down the line, so nothing crazy yet, nothing immediate, but be on the lookout for that. Nothing immediately that's coming this week over the next couple days, but I might be able to get to the Beach Bum, or maybe something else that no one else has covered yet that's still in theaters. So we'll see.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that'll do it for this week. But appreciate everybody for tuning in and listening to our detailed breakdown of Us.
Appreciate it, guys. You guys, take care. You know what we forgot? I forgot to ask you a question.
Oh, you know what? I was even going to say...
we can push that because we did have a very, very long podcast today.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.